The following sermon was delivered on Friday, December 25th, 2015.
Dear friends, this week's Torah portion, Vayechi, meaning "and he lived," opens with the story of Jacob's death. Old and nearing his end, the patriarch calls for Joseph's sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to be brought near so that he might bless them. The scene is extraordinary. Please follow with me from Genesis chapter 48 on the back of your handout. And Jacob said to Joseph, "El Shaddai appeared to me at Luz in the land of Canaan, and he blessed me and said to me, 'I will make you fertile and numerous, making of you a community of peoples. And I will give this land to your offspring to come for an everlasting possession.' Now your two sons who were born to you in the land of Egypt, before I came to you in Egypt, shall be mine. Ephraim and Manasseh shall be mine, no less than Reuben and Simeon. But progeny born to you after them shall be yours. They shall be recorded instead of their brothers in the inheritance." Now Israel's eyes were dim with age. He could not see. So Joseph brought them close to him, and he kissed them and embraced them. Joseph then removed them from his knees and bowed low with his face to the ground. Joseph took the two of them, Ephraim with his right hand to Israel's left, and Manasseh with his left hand to Israel's right, and brought them close to him. But Israel stretched out his right hand and laid it on Ephraim's head, though he was the younger, and his left hand on Manasseh's head, thus crossing his hands, although Manasseh was the firstborn. Parashat Vayechi is the last in Genesis, and in tying up the strands of the patriarchal narratives which comprise the Torah's first book, Vayechi deliberately recalls seminal events in our ancestors' lives. For example, God's appearance to Jacob at Luz, where he dreamt of the ladder reaching to the heavens with angels rushing up and down upon it. And in verse 10, his encounter with another angel at the Jabbok River, where he is renamed Israel. And the image of a blind father blessing two sons harkens back to Isaac mistaking Jacob for Esau. I want to look at this blessing now. In verse 5, we see that Jacob intends to adopt Joseph's two sons as his own. Rabbi Gunther Plaut, who edited the Reform Movement's Torah commentary, explains, "Jacob here adopts the two boys in a formal way by placing them on his knees. They now are like his own sons, hence Ephraim and Manasseh are reckoned among the tribes with Jacob's other sons." And then, having adopted them, Jacob blesses them. Joseph places the younger Ephraim at Jacob's left hand and the older Manasseh at Jacob's right hand so that the patriarch can easily place his right hand, representing the preferred blessing, upon the firstborn. That was the way of every society. The firstborn always received the larger share of the inheritance. The world knew nothing else. But what does Jacob do? He crosses his hands, giving the preferred blessing to the younger Ephraim. Why? Look at the answer offered by Torah's greatest commentator, Rashi. "He knew that Manasseh was the firstborn, and yet he did not place his right hand upon him. For of Ephraim will be born Joshua, who will make Israel inherit the land of Canaan and will instruct them in the Torah." Now, we may not believe that Jacob could actually see 400 years into the future to the birth of Joshua. But like his grandfather and father before him, Jacob recognized that survival sometimes necessitates operating against society's grain, and one shouldn't be bound by convention. His family had always broken with custom when it came to birthright and blessing. The younger Isaac's life as a farmer was better suited to sustaining Abraham's covenant with God than Ishmael's life as a hunter. And Jacob's own cunning and tenacity could better guarantee the faith's survival than the older Esau's brutishness. Jacob had learned through his own life's experiences that answering God's call often required breaking with cultural norms, and that the needs of the future are not always best served by the ways of the past. The message should not be lost on us. Communally speaking, our Jewish future, our ability to grow, to adapt, to engage more of the current and coming generations, depends on our receptivity to new approaches, our openness to switching things up, to examining old ideas from new angles. Nor should we accept as inevitable the societal norms we lament today, such as gun violence, institutionalized racism, a deepening hopelessness so many of us feel. An uplifting editorial in today's New York Times reminded us that even amidst the darkness of a grim year, there were moments of brightness where the tides seemed finally to turn on once intractable issues like climate change and marriage equality. And the message resonates personally, too. One of my favorite proverbs teaches, "You are what you are, not what you were." So many look at their lives or their families and see repeating patterns of frustration or dysfunction and feel caught, unable to move forward in a new direction. Yet we do have the ability to alter course. It isn't easy, certainly, but we need not accept what has been as what must be. I have seen lonely people who thought they would always remain alone find loving companionship at last. I've witnessed families divided for years work through bitter disputes to rebuild their relationships. And I have marveled at survivors of loss and illness as they find healing and wholeness again. We all have. Jacob's simple act of shifting his hands teaches us that we have the ability to shift the path of our lives. The challenge is to see beyond the experiences we know to glimpse other possibilities. A friend of mine once remarked how lucky we Jews are to celebrate two New Years. January 1st is not ours in a religious sense, but we should never miss an opportunity for new beginnings. As 2015 turns to 2016, may we find in our people's story new inspiration for our own lives and new hope for a world which needs it. Amen.